Thank you for listening to this podcast from KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. We invite you to listen to more music and talk on our grassroots non-profit radio station in Laguna Beach, California, from anywhere in the world on kx935.com/listen or on our smartphone apps. But right now, here's that podcast from KX93.5.
Good morning, Laguna Beach, Orange County, and to all our friends joining us today. Coming to you from the heart of the village in beautiful Laguna Beach, California, you're listening to Laguna Roundtable with smart talk and bold perspectives. Brought to you by your Laguna Roundtable co-hosts, Jim Kennedy and Dr. Ari Grayson on KX93.5.
Good morning, Laguna. It is Sunday, December 6th. Hope everyone's doing well out there. It's currently about 53 degrees, going up to a high of 77 degrees today. So we are up here. This is Righty Jim with my co-host, Dr. Ari. And we are getting ready to do a little show today on, we're going to be covering the climate forum in Paris, the terror attacks in San Bernardino, along with the Obamacare finally being repealed by the Senate. But let's kick the, and we're going to have a couple of on the tables. Dr. Ari, what's your on the table real quick title?
My on the table is, and the narcissist shall lead them.
And
I wonder who we're talking about here.
I was going to guess Hillary Clinton myself, but possibly not. And mine will be talking about trigger warnings. So we're going to kick off with a little bit of later news. As everybody knows, it is bowl season coming up. And today is the, actually, let's kick off with one other thing, a little bit of more pressing news. Tonight, 5 o'clock, all of your TV channels, same bat time, same bat channel. President Barack Obama will be addressing the nation from the Oval Office. First time that he has addressed the nation since 2011 and the pullout of troops from Iraq. And not really knowing what the subject will be, probably will be something about lecturing us that while AK-47s will kill you today, climate change will kill you in 100 years. So, Dr. Ari, any 30-second comments on the Dear Leader speech tonight?
I like our planet. I would like to see this climate summit successful. There's a climate summit currently going on in Paris, and, you know, I think obviously it's extremely important for a number of reasons, but we're going to have a little bit of time to talk about that
a little bit later
in the show.
Coming up shortly, but right now also we're going to talk about a little bit lighter, as I said. We are getting into bowl season, and as of when we go off the air at 9 o'clock this morning, Pacific time, the bowl championship committee will announce its four finalists, the top four teams in the bowl rankings who will play for the national championship. Now, not really much change, a little bit change yesterday, but not too much. Clemson won, Alabama won, Michigan State upset in a way. Iowa, though, I'm not sure what the line was. Most people I know were picking Michigan State. And then Oklahoma, because they're in a conference, it doesn't have a conference championship, did not play, but still retained the conference title. Right. And Baylor, who could have tied them as co-champion, got lost after they went through their fourth-string quarterback against Texas yesterday. Unfortunately, Baylor's lost three quarterbacks, and they had a wide receiver playing quarterback by the second quarter.
Yeah, that's a school, unfortunately, that's just been devastated and decimated by injury.
Yeah, but those things, you know, unfortunately, those things happen. Look at the NFL and how many quarterbacks have gone down this year. But on the BCS rankings, like I said, 9 o'clock, now, of course, you want to have the TV set on without any volume on while you're listening to Full English Breakfast with Jason Fetty coming up right after us, just to be fair.
Yes, please multitask that
one. Please multitask, absolutely. You are absolutely correct. But my guesstimation at the rankings will be 1 Clemson, 2 Alabama, 3 Michigan State, and 4 University of Oklahoma. Dr. Ari, what are your guesstimate rankings?
Well, this must be a sign of the apocalypse because I agree with you on that.
This is definitely a sign of the apocalypse.
Clemson, Bama, Michigan State, and Oklahoma are my four in that order as well. So it should be an interesting day, but I don't think there's a lot of suspense in.
Well, you never know. There could be some surprises in there. May decide that a one-loss Ohio State may be a better bet than an Oklahoma. Probably not, but you never really know. Or maybe even a one-loss Iowa. They made it to the conference championship, so we'll see. Maybe the Big 12 gets payback for having no team in the finals last year or in the Final Four last year. So, like I said, we're going to be talking about a number of different things. Our first news topic we're going to talk about is the Climate Forum. This week in Paris, and actually it's going on for another week, I believe, right? It started last Sunday. It goes until next Sunday?
Yes, something like that.
So,
I mean, why would you cut short a conference in Paris?
Well, you know, by the way, this, of course, because climate change, as Barack Obama has told us 22 times, is far more dangerous than any sort of threat from ISIS could possibly be. Because, I mean, CO2 is one, you know, an AK-47 is one thing. But CO2, now that's a real danger.
Yes, but we will defeat ISIS. And we only have one planet. So we want to make sure that we have a planet to hand down to future generations, one that is actually healthy and vibrant and one where people can actually breathe.
And when you stand in front of an AK-47, you only have one life. And that's a little bit more of an imminent threat from what we learned this week.
Well,
now, here's an interesting fact. 300,000 tons of CO2 will be emitted by conference attendees in transit et al. Dr. Ari, is that very green? Why couldn't this have been done over one big, huge Skype conference?
There's something about having the direct contact and the personal relationships with one another. I think that's paramount. It's not the same when you have, something Skyped and you just don't have that connection. You don't have the time where you can sit quietly one-on-one as these things tend to progress into, where we have people kind of break off and have negotiations and conferences or little sub-conferences. I think that's extremely important and something especially as profound as this, where we are talking about the long-term health and well-being of our planet. I know we're going to shock our audience here and disagree on this, but, you know, I see not only the summit being important to climate change, but even just the quality of life in different cities around the world, communities around the world, because of the problems that we're seeing now with, you know, cities across China where people are literally choking to death because of the carbon dioxide in the air.
Well, they're choking to death if they are choking to death. And having been to China, I will attest to this, that the air is pretty foul. It is basically, think AQMD, stage 3 alert, 1974 in L.A., and then basically double it.
Yeah.
It is hideous. But that is not climate change. That is China burning more coal than we can get out of the ground in a day in China. They're opening one new coal-fired power plant a day, I believe, throughout China. That was a number a couple of years ago.
Okay.
I assume it's so constant as their industrial revolution continues over there. So that's a China problem.
Actually, China's become one of the world leaders in construction of renewable energy sources, particularly
which they
windmills,
sell to the Americans at nice profits and lead to a nice trade deficit with
us. You know, we ought to be putting the factories at Detroit back in online, and we should be cranking out solar panels, solar.
Oh, we tried that. Wasn't it called Solyndra that cost us $500 million of taxpayer money?
You know, there are always failed examples, but and poor businesses
and,
out there.
And there are failed examples, but no successful examples.
But
well, there's Spain.
No. There's a lot of successful examples. You know, we've actually reduced energy consumption here from carbon sources here in California, and the goal is to have something like 30% of our energy here in California from renewables by 2020. So basically 4 years from now.
That's fine. We can, if you want to do something that's, as long as it's economically viable, I don't care. If you want to go and make your protest and buy a Tesla, that's fine. Just when you break down on the road halfway to San Francisco, don't look for me to give you a ride because you chose to buy a Tesla instead of a dinosaur powered vehicle that could go the whole route without breaking down, without running out of the battery.
Well, but one of the responsibilities of government is to help to jumpstart industries that need a little bit of push on their own because of the initial capital cost and that because initial costs are high. I mean, I have an old catalog that I threw out when we moved here to California that showed a 1 gigabyte internal drive for a computer. It was $1,000.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You know, so now they give them away on pens when you go to a conference, you know, little plug-in thumb drive
get for sure. Flash drive, sure.
You know, and you'll get, you know, 8 or 16 gigabytes, and they're giving them away like they would give you a napkin to wipe your lips.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it is important that we have government investment in these things to help bring the cost down over time.
Right, but it hasn't really been government invested. I mean, come on, solar panels have been around for 45 years. I remember people in the 70s putting solar panels up. The problem is the efficiency of them was horrible.
Right.
And you couldn't run a house on them efficiently without spending $50,000 in 1980 dollars. So now the problem is, or not the problem is, but we've got to the point where industry and private industry, and probably a lot of it may very well come out of universities and university researchers, students that are trying to, you know, that advance the technology by advancing their studies through STEM work, science, technology, and mathematics, or engineering and mathematics have basically created a lot more efficient solar cells, photovoltaic cells, and that's where the reason why it's now economically viable. And right. I have a friend who's done this. They basically bought the panels and put them on there. I mean, they didn't put them on, but the company put them on
right.
for them. And now they're I think they're, you know, an average of a net energy
producer
rather than yeah. payer. Thank you, appreciate yeah. that. Yeah. Now, but the real holy grail, just to get us off track for 1 second, is the real holy grail in all of this isn't solar photovoltaic cells, isn't, you know, 1 kilowatt or megawatt windmills, isn't, you know, electric airplanes. The real point where this will really become viable, and even with Tesla cars, is important, is battery technology.
Yes.
It's the ability to store the power. Because we can produce all the power we really need. The problem is the ability to store it, because it's a resource you cannot store for any extended of time, and you cannot transport it efficiently over very large distances. Whereas you couldn't create a solar farm, couldn't like cut out the middle of Africa and create a solar farm on the equator and then ship the electricity all over the world because of resistance and electricity lines and just basic, you know, just basic chemistry and electricity.
But in many ways that actually works to our benefit, because you have local users. So in other words, the power source that you're using to provide electricity to your house is right on the roof of your house.
Right, but that's not really a benefit. I mean, seriously.
Sure. It's anytime you can decentralize like that. In fact, in Arizona, it's been so effective, the movement towards solar energy, that the conservatives in the state are trying to get the Corporation Commission to invoke a surcharge onto solar energy users, because they have so much electricity being generated on individual homes that they're feeding that power back into the grid. And so the utility companies are considering people who are doing that to be moochers, freeloading on their grid.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and I'm sure that's coming in California. And plus, don't forget, because of higher CAFE standards, corporate average fuel economy,
right,
that they want to raise the gas tax because we're not buying as much gasoline because we have higher efficiency cars. So the government still finds a way to get its money out of you one way or another. But let's find.
But we still need to build the roads that transport our car, to allow our cars to move from point A to point B.
Right, but they say buy higher efficiency cars. Buy higher efficiency cars, you'll save money. Then they come back and say, oh, you saved too much money, here's a higher tax for you. Well, thanks a lot, government. Thanks a lot, Governor Moonbeam 2.0.
The taxes are still required, because we have to make sure that we have the roads and infrastructure, which in our country is absolutely in horrible shape compared to almost any nation in
different,
the world.
Different subject. Finally, let's wrap up the climate forum. What was agreed to? What's going to be agreed to? And is this binding on anybody?
You know, I think that's part of the challenge,
the
is getting everybody.
Silence.
Well, you know, I think that's always part of the challenge, is to not only get nations to agree to a resolution or proposals, not proposals, but actions going forth, and actually carrying them out. In a sense, it's not a lot different from the SALT negotiations and the SALT treaties, you know, trust but verify.
But those were pretty much direct bilateral treaties. They didn't involve the 146 or 216 different countries. But who all have their own self-interest at stake.
Well, but part of what we'll be able to do is go into other nations and actually help them, developing nations particularly, which are some of the best targets in this kind of scenario, because they need to build infrastructure to provide their power source. If we can come into nations across Africa, let's say.
Right. I don't think of the Ivory Coast as being a big polluter, whereas the big polluters are basically India, China, technically the United States, Russia are the big polluters, basically the industrialized countries, because energy production and, regardless, you know, what you want to call it, emission of exhaust is simply what happens because you're an industrial power.
Well, but we have developing nations, too, which hopefully in the 21st century are going to become large consumers of power. We need to make sure that as they expand in their power needs, they are brought online with green technologies, if possible. In a sense, it's like Africa developing
communication systems and using cellular technology rather than coming in and building
wired,
a grid.
Right,
exactly. So if we can do similar kinds of things where individual homes or businesses are able to be brought online with green power and green technology, so much better for the world down the road in the long run.
So basically, first of all, okay, so the original question was what's going to be agreed to? Is there going to be a Paris communique like the Kyoto summit? And
in all likelihood, I would imagine that's part of the process.
What is binding on the U.S. or anybody?
You know, you can only you're only binding what can be enforced. I mean, it's hard enough to enforce nuclear test treaties, let alone this kind of treaty. But hopefully most nations recognize that this is in their best interest to be efficient, have, you know, be able to circumvent the problems that we're seeing in China now with the overwhelming pollution in their cities. So as African nations develop further and further into the 21st century, they'll be using green technology and not creating the air quality issues.
Yeah, so it sounds like the firm possibility. So you're telling me it's a firm possibility of a definite maybe coming out of this.
You know, you try to put whatever pressure you can on nations and help them to engage in the development themselves. What we have to recognize is that, you know, we are one big global community, and what happens in one part of the world affects us in another part of the world. It makes me crazy when I drive back to Arizona when I'm heading to Scottsdale. If I'm in Scottsdale, the gas stations have, and they are required to have, fume recapture.
Right.
It's a requirement all over America. Right. Vapor recovery
systems. Yeah, we have it in California. We probably started it.
But when you get outside of Maricopa County, it's not required.
Sure.
So if I fill up my car in Quartzsite, the fumes are allowed to escape into the air, which go into this entire global soup, if you will, of crud.
But Dr. Arya, I thought you drove a Prius. Why would you put gas in a Prius?
Oh, Prius is a hybrid. It's not all electric.
Yes,
I still get my 45 miles a gallon driving back and forth.
I'm
introducing half of the CO2 into the air.
Well, I'm not sure about that, but okay, so wrap up.
No, actually, that's the very nature of the conservation of mass and the use of energy, is that when energy is burned, if a gallon of gas weighs nine pounds, okay, which is basically what a gallon of liquid weighs, I burn that. I still have 9 pounds of particles which enter the air. It's just like picking up 9 pounds of dirt and throwing it into the air. That dust and dirt, those particles move out across our globe and settle across our planet. And that's what we're doing when we're using something like a hybrid car and getting 45 miles a gallon rather than 22.5. We're introducing half as much of these airborne particles as I would if I were using a less fuel-efficient car.
But a perfectly efficient internal combustion engine would actually only produce water vapor. So engines become more and more efficient, we're producing more water vapor, which is not a greenhouse gas, and as far as I've learned.
So will we produce more rain?
We'll just increase the humidity. Thank you.
At some point, we could increase the rain. Then we'll have too much water.
We won't have a drought. Thank you. Okay.
Yeah.
So we got off topic there. So basically, the summary is 300,000 tons of CO2 emitted by the conference attendees who will maybe come up with a communique that will probably not be binding on everybody. So that's good to know. But hey, as Obama has said 22 times, global warming is a far greater threat than terrorism. So Laguna Roundtable, KX93.5, with your co-host, Righty Jim and Dr. Ari Grayson. Let's talk about people who actually are dying this week, unfortunately, in the tragedy of the terrorist shooting from Islamic fundamentalist in San Bernardino. Dr. Ari, you want to give us a summary of this horrible event?
Well, you know, I think one of the scary things is that, you know, reports coming from the family is that this couple was not particularly religious. They were radicalized. And, you know, that's one of the great challenges that we have in this country and around the world, for that matter, is how do we deal with individuals who succumb to this kind of murderous cult mentality, believing somehow that they are doing something great for God or for religion or for the well-being
Allah.
Of people who similar faith.
Doing it for Allah.
These people are very masterful. I don't see this, though, as being as much of an issue of it being an Islamic issue. Islam is being used But this is basically a murderous cult that we're dealing with when we're talking about ISIS. And we're
according to the president, it's a gun issue.
That's one of the vehicles that are used.
And according to Martin O'Malley, it's a gun issue. And according to Hillary Clinton, it's a gun issue.
We have a problem with guns in this country. We have so many guns that are not used for personal defense.
I think we have a problem with ignorant politicians in this country, but that's a different issue.
And we have plenty of both. There's not a shortage of either, so we have plenty of both to go around.
If we could only regulate as much as you guys want to regulate the other one, it would be a lot better.
But coming up, I have finally confirmed an interview with Anila Ali, who has worked with the FBI task force here in Los Angeles.
She rooting out Muslim terrorists?
On working with them on bettering relationships with the community and in working on identifying people who are susceptible or actively engaged in
planning
actively engaged in planning terrorist attacks.
Really, if you engage them after they've been actively about it, it's not quite as important as it is before.
Well, once they're acting on it. But she also served on a White House panel on combating violent extremism. I think it's going to be extremely important for our community and our friends to hear what Anila has to say. She's absolutely wonderful, very articulate, very bright, and she's been very engaged. So I think it's terrific. Opportunity for our listeners to hear a voice who nominally comes from the other side,
yes.
In that she's from Pakistan, she's Muslim, and she's by all means and measures a very engaged voice for the side of peace and fighting these kind of extremists.
You should ask her if she knows the female terrorists, because they were both women and they're both from Pakistan, so maybe they were. Maybe they crossed paths somewhere.
They may have.
But the summary,
it's a small world, and San Bernardino is not that far from here, so there may have been opportunity for them.
Well, I was thinking
more
so when they were both in Pakistan, but so be it. Terrorism. So 14 dead, unfortunately, 21 injured. We have some follow up on this. Yesterday, there was a raid in Redlands for one of the associates. They suspect he might have been the person that obtained the military. Weapons or the military rifles that they use now. We were talking before the show, Dr. Ari, about we're commenting that they used AK-47s. Do we know that for a fact they used AK-47s, or have you seen any reports on exactly what rifles, and have the FBI identified what rifles were used in the shootings?
They may have. I haven't seen anything particular at this point. Specific on the type.
Right.
I would assume they have the weapons. The two perpetrators of the incident.
I just didn't know if anybody said them, or I just missed an FBI briefing where they. Now, there were reports from witnesses and so on that they were AK-47s,
right.
But I never heard the FBI stand up and say, or the San Bernardino County Police or City of San Bernardino Police say, the weapons used in the terrorist attack were AK-47s.
Well,
so I was trying to, because I don't know how easy it is really to find an AK-47. More like your AR-15 would be a little bit more easier to obtain. In America, I don't know that there's a lot of AK-47 floating around, and maybe Chirac, but that's about it.
You know, our state legislature was talking about this week. Well, they were talking about this week having the guns manufactured so you can't just change the cartridge. The magazines, thank you. The correct word, magazines. The magazines and reload. The way these people sought to do.
Well,
so
already,
that's
already,
a good indication, though, that they were a reloadable. I don't know whether they were an AK-47 or what.
Okay, well, I'm going to save that for the segment. We're going to do our topic at the bottom, a little bit past the bottom of the hour on the shooting in more detail. So, by the way, and also ISIS has claimed support for them, or has claimed them as one of their supporters. Again, they could be opportunistic. The woman terrorist did post a homage to Bakr al-Baghdadi, who is the leader of ISIS, on her Facebook page. Evidently, sometime between when she shot the people and before she got shot. She didn't do it beforehand. So we're going to talk about this more in detail. Let's move on to our third news item of the week. Obamacare repealed by the Senate. This is, by the way, Laguna Roundtable, KX93.5. You can reach us also at KX93.5.com with your co-host, Righty Jim and Dr. Ari Grayson. Dr. Ari, Obamacare repealed by the Senate this week, 52-47 vote, goes to the House, but the House has already repealed it, I know, 108 times,
right.
where the evil Senate hasn't. It was repealed by reconciliation because it's a budget matter rather than by a filibuster-proof 60-vote margin. But just to remember, reconciliation was how Harry Reid snuck this through against public outcry back in 2010. So is this finally a good thing? Are we finally going to get rid of this monstrosity of Obamacare that's costing us trillions of dollars and 6 million people lost their insurance with?
Well, actually, the first of all, Congress has only voted to repeal, so it hasn't been a repeal yet. It's going to most certainly be vetoed by the president.
Oh, partisan politics by the president.
Absolutely. That's as it should be. Absolutely. And I think also that this goes to show the importance of the elections in 2016, especially those 17 million people who have now received coverage by the Affordable Care Act. People need to go out and vote.
I think that number is closer to 10 million.
Well, people need to go out and vote. They need to make sure that they have candidates who are going to support the positions that are of importance to the voters.
What's that sound? Oh, that's crickets. I'm sorry, crickets. Okay, yeah. Now, we were promised 40 million. We promised every uninsured American would have insurance after the Affordable Care Act was passed. That was 40 million Americans. So we've got 15, I think is a little generous. I'm going to say 10, but even if it's 15. Okay, so where's the other 25 million that were promised insurance coverage? Where did that promise go?
The numbers keep growing over time. They'll continue to grow as
But the administration's also reducing its estimates because and we were at 15 million, I think, well, supposedly 15 million last year. So you're talking about adding maybe a million this year. How many exchanges have gone broke? How many billions or trillions or billions have we spent on this? How much did the healthcare.gov website cost? How much did the Oregon site that went under because it could never work cost? California is almost $1 billion in the hole on this and may very well have to close its exchange in the next 18 months. United Healthcare wants out of this because they're losing millions and millions of dollars on this. So again, tell me how this is a helpful thing.
You know, it costs money in order to save money as far as health, especially
as far as health.
No.
Please let me have that gem of liberalism again.
You know.
One more time, Dr. Ari.
It takes money in order to save money.
You have to
build the structure and have it in place in order. But when people get sick and have to go to a hospital as their primary care for the emergency room for what should nominally be treated as primary care, it winds up costing us more money in the long run. And that's a hidden cost.
Yeah,
so it's better to have a good, efficient healthcare system in place. And why don't we just have Medicare for everybody?
That would be
the most efficient way to do this. Just expand it. It will take money in order to do that.
Should I be calling you Dr. Bernie instead of Dr. Ari now?
You might as well. I don't see that as the pejorative that some other people might.
I wasn't really making it a pejorative. I was just simply identifying the, if it quacks like a duck, I want to call it a duck. I just want to be accurate in what I'm calling this monstrosity because I'm sure Bernie's a big supporter of socialized medicine.
Absolutely.
He's a socialist himself.
Absolutely. And I don't think there's anything wrong with having socialized medicine in this country. I think it would be a benefit to an enormous number of people.
Because we could save money by spending more money.
If you want to reduce the cost that hospitals incur by uninsured people coming in for emergency treatment for something that could have been handled at a medical office instead.
Or could have been handled through preventative care is the point.
Or preventative care.
The problem is,
you have to spend money prophylactically. If I don't spend the money it takes in order to replace the oil in my car and my car engine burns out, it will cost me a lot more money to replace my engine than it would have to maintain it. And that's what healthcare needs in this country.
We need to make sure
people have that maintenance cost all along rather than incur. And that's one of the things that we're seeing with Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood is not just an abortion facility as
conservatives. No, they really are in the prophylactic business.
Very good. I like that, Jim.
Thank you.
But prophylactics are a good example. You know, spend a few dollars on prophylactics rather than the tens of thousands of dollars it will cost to put a child through college. Healthcare is no different. That's why Planned Parenthood is so essential.
Well, for Sandra Fuke,
hang on, let me just finish this one moment. Sorry. No, I realize I'm talking a lot. But, you know, one of the major tasks of Planned Parenthood, and they're terrific in this mission, is providing cancer screening and breast examinations for women. And so, you know, if a woman has to undergo chemotherapy, a double mastectomy, or whatever might occur as a result of developing cancer, if we can catch that at the early stages, that is money well spent. So, yes, spend the money on screening and prophylactic health care rather than on major health care crises. Okay. Anyway, sorry,
well,
Jim.
Well, according to Sandra Fluke, it costs her thousands of dollars a month, not $12, for a prophylactic. That's a whole different problem in and of itself. Second of all, there is actually no mammograms given or taken at Planned Parenthood. But back to the original point about making or spending money to save money, which again doesn't make any sense. Obamacare isn't really about providing health care. It's simply about providing insurance. And now you've got people that can't afford it that are paying $250 a month for health care. So now when they go into the ER, not only can they not get coverage because they have a $7,000 deductible with their policy, they're still going to the ER to get their medical coverage because that doesn't change people's processes or people's habits. They've always gone to the ER for their health care when it becomes emergent rather than preventable through a doctor's visit over time. And they are still doing this. That pattern hasn't changed. ERs have seen no change in traffic patterns from people coming in. Just now they have to tell them if you want a coverage, you have to give us $7,000 up front. Dr. Ari?
We need to work on our healthcare system from top to bottom. We need to make sure that everybody has access to affordable healthcare.
Maybe we need to do a patient's bill of rights like I proposed.
I thought that was a terrific idea. You know, if our listeners haven't heard that, go to our podcast and listen to Jim's suggestions on that. Do you remember the exact title of that,
I will
Jim?
Actually tweet out I think it's called the Patient's Bill of Rights is what I titled it. And I will, it's an alternative to the ACA is basically what it is.
You know, I think there were certainly good ideas out there, and that's the thing. You know,
a Republican with good ideas, wow. You're going to be excommunicated from the party for that.
You know, I think
they're going to take your Hillary bumper sticker away from your car.
I think it's important to recognize when somebody has a good idea, a good suggestion. You know, we need to listen to these things rather than believing that one group of people or one side of the aisle has all of the answers. We need to recognize that good suggestions can come from everywhere. I may discard 95% of what you have to say. Okay. But those 5%, those might be real pearls.
Did it occur to you that you might be better off going the other direction and listen to 95%?
No, Jim, you know, we're now going on the first anniversary of our show.
This is our 1-year anniversary.
That's right. It's a happy anniversary.
What'd you get me for my anniversary?
I was good. You know, maybe a little bit of indigestion when you hear my On the Table segment. Maybe that's my gift to you today. Heartburn.
No one brought us in cupcakes with candles on them for anniversary. I kept forgetting about that, but that is our 1-year anniversary this week.
You know, I think this is one of the mistakes that we're seeing in our representative government now, is you really need to look and listen to what the other side has to offer, even if you only believe that there's 5% gems. Take those, run with them.
Well, the problem is it's higher 5% for me, but, you know.
I wanted to be realistic here, Jim. So I don't want to sound like I'm exaggerating here, and I certainly don't want to inflate your ego at this time in the morning.
All right, Laguna Roundtable Kicks, 93.5. Friday night, two nights ago, was hospitality night, and who came to town?
Santa came to town. He came right into the heart of the village. He's got his Laguna Beach house here right on Main Street. It's absolutely wonderful. Were you out there, Jim? I didn't see you.
No, I was not out there. I was not back in town yet.
It was absolutely wonderful. The streets were packed. The pepper tree at City Hall, which was lit up earlier in the evening, was absolutely beautiful. I've got some great pictures of it. There was music in the streets. There was dancing. There was people having fun. The shops were open. People were going in and visiting.
There were hot chocolate and cookies and stuff given away.
Oh, absolutely.
We broadcast, or we didn't, but the station broadcast live from there, I believe.
The station broadcast live.
I assume Tyler and Jason.
Our very own Jason Fetty and Tyler Russell were out there entertaining the crowd. It was absolutely wonderful. It's actually one of my favorite days of the year in the city here.
It's a very popular day, and it's a traffic I'm going to say a traffic nightmare because everybody just kind of parks and walks. But
I didn't think traffic was bad, but I just, you know, I came into the village and then just walked around, so yeah. I don't have that far to go.
And to give and to give equal time to the other side, what is happening today?
Today is the first night of Hanukkah, so
Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah, everybody. If you haven't been to Main Beach, go down there today. You'll see that there's our classic surfboard menorah.
I saw that in a picture in the Indy, yes.
Isn't that wonderful? You know,
so it's actually kind of neat looking. I think it's pretty quintessential Laguna.
It is quintessential Laguna. It's so cool. In fact, yesterday I sent a picture of the surfboard menorah to some friends in Georgia, so hopefully they got a kick out of it. But actually, last year, to me, it was one of the funniest scenes that I'd seen in a long time. And, of course, coming here and being relatively new to Southern California, I was at the pavilions and I came out to my car, and parked next to me was a small SUV that had a Christmas tree strapped to the roof. Next to the Christmas tree was strapped a surfboard. And I thought, okay, if this doesn't say Southern California to the rest of the world, I don't know what will.
There you go.
Absolutely perfect scene.
Laguna Roundtable, KX93.5. I hope everybody goes out and enjoys their, hope everyone enjoyed the hospitality night. And if you're of the Jewish persuasion, go down to Main Beach. Do you know what time the menorah thing is today?
I'm not certain the time. It will probably be sometime around 5 o'clock. Because
just as it's starting to get darkish because you want to be able to see the light.
Well, it's right after sunset or right at sunset. So it should be sometime between, I would imagine, 4:30 and, you know, 5:30.
I think if you check the Indy, you can probably find it.
No doubt. And Chabad of Laguna Beach would have that as well. Chabad. Chabad is one of the Orthodox religious groups here in Laguna Beach.
All right, we're going to take a short music break. We'll be back for our topics and then our On the Tables. This is Laguna Roundtable, KX93.5. Here is a little Rock the Casbah by The Clash.
Jet pilot's way. Shall we go back?
All right. I think it's a little clash. Rock the Casbah. Drop the bombs on the minarets. And we are at Pearl and Coast Highway. If Loretta Lynch wishes to come down and arrest me for anti-Islamic speech by playing the the Clash Rock the Casbah. By the way, they're British citizens, so good luck chasing Joe Strummer down. All right, this is Laguna Roundtable, KX93.5, with your co-host, Righty Jim, and Dr. Arvie Grayson. Coming up on next Sunday, 5 o'clock, Dr. Arvie, where are you going to be next Sunday at 5 o'clock?
I'm going to be at the Winter Concert Classic.
All right.
It's going to be Kenny Loggins is going to be playing.
Yep. Irvine Bowl, 5 o'clock. It'll start. Kenny Loggins, the Shadow Boxers, and David Allen Barker. This is one of our annual fundraisers for KXNE35. As you know, we are a community-supported station. All of you wonderful listeners out there are the reason that we're allowed to be on the air and find programs like Laguna Roundtable and coming up after us, Full English Breakfast with Jason Fetty, are on the air. So you need to come out and attend the concert. It's presented by KX935 and the Montauk Laguna Beach. I believe there will also be a visit from Old St. Nick himself. So enjoy the season, Sounds of the Seasons, and classic favorites. Children will delight in a winter wonderland with holiday activities, falling snow, and Santa Claus. I understand there will also probably be cookies and hot chocolate, and also other libations available for purchase at the event, Irvine Bowl Festival of the Arts, 5 o'clock next Sunday. I will probably be there. If my schedule works out, I will hopefully be there. But to come on out, you can buy tickets on the KX935 website or the Montage website, MONTA.GE/winter concert. And
Laguna Beach will never be confused with Philadelphia, where I believe it was in the late 70s, Santa appeared at a Philadelphia Eagles football game and was promptly pelted with snowballs.
Oh, well, so they boo Santa Claus all the time in Philadelphia. He would, the guy that drove the Zamboni in the Flyers game would get roundly booed when he dressed as Santa Claus. Yeah.
The city of brotherly love.
Yeah, the city of brotherly love is brutal. Yeah. Yeah, they boo Santa Claus mercilessly back there. It's tough. It's a tough city. So Chicago may be tough, but Philadelphia may have a leg up on them. All right. Speaking of tough, unfortunately, here, Islamic terrorism. San Bernardino this week. Unfortunately, 14 innocent souls were killed by our two terrorists, who I'm not going to name because I don't want to publicize them any farther. Dr. R, we talked a little bit about this earlier. President Obama is going to be addressing the nation at 5 o'clock tonight. He has about 20 minutes before the more important thing, which is the football game, starts at 5:30, which I'm not sure who the game is tonight. I believe it's the Steelers and the Colts, a Central Division AFC Classic amongst two marginally 500 teams. So if you're not listening to KX935 tonight at 5 o'clock, you should be watching the president's address and watching the football while you're listening to KX935, of course.
You know, so, I was somewhat perplexed this week, though, because in the Senate, a bill came forth to increase the screening of terrorists or increase in gun control. And the idea was to use the terrorist watch list and not allow terrorists or people who are on the terrorist watch list to purchase a gun. Only one Republican voted in favor of tighter restrictions using the government watch list. Now, I understand there are problems with the watch list, the travel watch list. There's right. No question about that. You mentioned before the show to me that Ted Kennedy was on that.
Yeah, he was on the no-fly list for a long time. He couldn't get himself off of it. I mean, he's Ted Kennedy. And basically, I know that I remember he complained and sent a letter, and they wouldn't tell him why he was on the list.
Right.
It's like, now, I don't know. I mean, I would personally make sure Ted Kennedy couldn't drive a car rather than being on the no-fly list. But evidently, you know, the list is not well maintained, and I'm curious why, you know, a person named Kennedy was on the watch list, but hey, so be it. But there's problems with the list, and the process where it's run is poorly managed. You getting off of it is, even for Ted Kennedy, is a nightmare to try to prove you're not who they think or why you are.
Right.
And most of the time, they really can't, I mean, they can't tell you for security reasons, but many times they don't really know why. You just wound up on the list one day, and therefore, you're there, and if the government did it, it must be right, because why would the government ever make a mistake?
Well, I think, you know, certainly this is a process that needs to be made much, much better, much more efficient. That can certainly be done. The reality with screening is a screen will let through certain particles. And that's no different than the screening process that we have. It's not going to prevent 100% terrorists getting guns.
Right, but the relevant fact to this week's shootings is neither of these people were on the watch list.
Or would they have been? And that's the scary thing.
Well, maybe they should have been.
Well,
maybe she should have been.
No question about it. So these things, you know, they're not fail-safe.
So they couldn't vet these people accurately. And how bad the vetting was for her, she made up a hometown in Pakistan that doesn't exist, and it went through. Nobody checked it.
Well, not being fail-safe is not a good reason for not having a screening process in place.
But we have President Obama telling us, oh, don't worry about the 100,000 Syrians. We can screen these people, though we don't have a database of their names or a way to verify whether their IDs are accurate or whether they're really who they say they are.
Can you imagine, though, the uproar on the right if the conservatives were proposing we add the terrorist watch list to people who could not buy guns? Had you had the argument flipped and it was President Obama saying, no, we can't add the terrorist watch list to people who can't buy guns. If he had said that and there were another attack, the nation would be screaming absolute bloody murder. Now, why the Republicans don't suffer the same kind of consequences for this action, I don't know. Let's see if there is pushback against it. But the reality is we need to have these processes in place, and we need to make them – they will never be perfect, but we need to make them as strong as possible.
I agree we need to look into this. We have a much larger problem. It's called Islamic fundamentalism and Islamic terrorism. Two words our president will not utter, probably will not utter tonight in his speech, because he fundamentally does not believe in the concept of Islamic fundamentalism or Islamic terrorism. It's a gun problem we got the lecture this week on. From Barack Obama, president, from Hillary Clinton, candidate for president, from Martin O'Malley. Actually, to be honest, the best answer of all the presidential candidates on the left was Bernie Sanders. When they asked Bernie, what do we do about this problem? He goes, I don't know. He at least had an honest answer. He doesn't know. Right. I'd like him to have an answer, but that's an honest answer. I will give Bernie credit for giving the honest answer rather than trying to make political fodder out of this by offering a made-up solution to cram this into a fake agenda item that they want to push today to make the narrative of the day to push the agenda forward. In addition, there was and I'd like to see your comments on this and hopefully some comment to the negative on this, of all of the prayer mocking and the prayer shaming by the left. There was all over the Twitter sphere and all over social media, the left was mocking people because most of the presidential candidates sent out prayers and thoughts for the loved ones in the terrorist attack. And there was constant shaming from the left on, well, you can pray all you want, but God's not taking your guns away. We have to take your guns away and stuff like that. And the prayer is not a solution to the problem, which this, of course, was twofolded wrong. A, you're mocking people's faith. Second of all, they were speaking out before they actually knew what had happened when Obama had already spoken and made try to make this a gun issue. Martin O'Malley won the jump into the pool before I know what's in it award for this, because he was able within 45 minutes to get a tweet out complaining about the gun violence problem in America, not the Islamic terrorism problem, which is a word I don't think he will say either. So what do you say about the prayer shaming of people when someone tries to send thoughts and prayers out to victims of these tragedies?
You know, I think, these kinds of insults are wrong in any regard. I'm not very comfortable in anyone who mocks somebody else's desire for faith and solace, and that's what God brings to so many people, is a little bit of
probably
solace.
Probably not the atheist, though.
And a little bit of, but to a lot of people, as I say, a reminder that perhaps there is something more than ourselves out there. Now, obviously, we have a large number of atheists in our population. Their beliefs should be respected as well. And unfortunately, we see this kind of mocking going on both sides. I remember in 2012 when Mitt Romney was running and, his Mormon faith was an issue, at least to some people, there were polls that were done that looked at how hard it would be for somebody who is Muslim, Christian, Jewish, what have you, or Catholic, how hard it might be for them to become president. Homosexuals would, according to this poll, have less difficulty being elected as president of the United States than somebody who is atheist. And I think that's a terrible thing as well, because the belief is that...
We're a Judeo-Christian... Homosexuality doesn't relate to your religion. It relates to your sexual preference. We are a Judeo-Christian...
Well, sexual orientation, not preference.
Sorry. Okay.
That's okay. That's all right.
Yeah. But we are a Judeo-Christian country that is founded upon Judeo-Christian principles. Okay? The almost all of the founders of this country were marginally religious people. They went to church. They prayed. Right. They believed in God.
They didn't have Sunday football, but that's another story.
Well, that's why they were able to go to church more often. They weren't missing the Eagles games or something because they could boo Santa Claus at the game. But we are founded upon those things, and those are the tenets of which this nation is founded on. Now, while there was not, of course, an official religion choice, we have freedom of religion. But yes. That didn't mean freedom from religion. It just meant that the state would not select a religion of which you were required to abide by, as in England did with the Anglican Church. There was no official state religion, but it was firmly in stance that we are a Judeo-Christian country. So I understand the atheism part over the homosexual part. Don't know how that relates, though, to the terrorism part that we're trying to fight.
Well, because we should be respecting people regardless of their beliefs, whether they're atheist, agnostic, Jewish, Muslim, Christian. It doesn't matter. Hindu, Buddhist, you know, you can list all of the world's religions.
Respect is something that's earned, not given. If the Islamics are shooting people up as fundamentalists, not really sure they're going to earn the respect of many people.
No, absolutely not. But we don't also want to cast aspersions on the entire Muslim faith because of people who misuse the religion for their own ends or for their own purposes.
I was listening to a program last night where somebody commented about he's a war veteran. He'd been in Iraq. They'd use lots of locals to help them translate and root out bad guys.
Right.
And some of them he's been trying to get to the U.S. And one of these helpers that he had in the Iraq War had come over, and he said that this guy, you know, talked to him during the week. He said, "You know what? I give up. I'm a Muslim. I have the beard and all that. And you know what? I am so fed up with this that he really wants to convert to Christianity because he wants a religion where he doesn't have to basically explain to everybody what's in the Quran. Yes, it's accurate. It's in the Quran. No, I don't abide by it. Yes, there are people that are killing in the name of the Quran." And he goes like, "You know, I'm a Muslim, but I'm just fed up with this." He goes, "I'm looking to convert because it simply isn't worth the hassle anymore and the bad name that the rest of the Muslims have given us. So, or that have given to him and the plenty of peace-loving, the 99% probably that are peace-loving Muslims."
Well, and I think that's an important point. We need to remind people that the very, very vast majority of people who are Muslim are peace-loving. We don't even recognize that they're Muslim because they're just like everybody else. I mean, I think that's the important thing.
But you also don't want to forget the impact that two terrorists can have in one day.
Absolutely. There's no question about it.
But this is an answer that a question we'll probably not solve today.
And Jim and I are going to work on having good people like Anila Ali so we can have the conversation here and help to inform our listeners.
All right. So we need to move on to our on the tables. Dr. Ari, why don't you kick off with, this is about Hillary the narcissist or something?
No, not exactly.
Not exactly.
But
so it's about Hillary?
Not exactly.
Oh, okay. Why don't you go ahead and give us our on the table.
I'm Ari, and I'm putting, "And the narcissist shall lead them," on the table. The Iowa caucuses are less than 2 months away. Polls currently show Donald Trump has the largest percentage of support at 27%. He's followed by Ben Carson at 14%, Marco Rubio at 12%, and of course, George Bush is bringing up the rear at 3% and dropping. Republican leaders are increasingly concerned, though, about Donald Trump's apparent ability to survive despite controversial statements and questionable behaviors. GOP strategists have begun to brace for a long and painful nomination fight. Former Republican governor of Nevada, Robert List, recently said of Trump, quote, he's the typical sort of person that historically folks thought of as a typical Republican, wealthy country club guy who has a strong will and doesn't listen to a lot of hardworking folks. That's the least of my concern. Some establishment Republicans worry about the inflammatory rhetoric by Trump aimed at Latinos and Syrian refugees. Max Boot, an advisor to Senator Mark Rubio, said recently, quote, "Trump is a fascist, and that's not a term I use loosely or often, but he's earned it." other conservatives concur. Although Trump's behavior doesn't meet the dictionary definition of fascism, a remarkable number of mental health experts are concerned about the possibility of a Trump presidency, and they explain that he displays, quote, textbook narcissistic personality disorder. Now, narcissistic personality disorder is characterized by arrogant behavior, disregards the feeling of others and a lack of empathy for others, a need for admiration, react to criticism with anger, shame, or humiliation, takes advantage of others to reach his or her own goals, exaggerates their own importance, exaggerates achievements and talents, entertains unrealistic fantasies about success, power, beauty, intelligence, or romance, requires constant attention and positive reinforcement from others, has obsessive self-interest, and pursues mainly selfish goals. The polling suggests that the more offensive speech of a candidate, the more you threaten to harm people of a different race, religion, or belief, the more the maniacs on the far right love you. Voters on the far right see themselves in Trump. They're dead set against what they derisively call, quote, political correctness, rather than seeing it as respect for others. They see political correctness as something to be despised and rejected. They seemingly cannot understand the concepts of dignity and respect. And the narcissist shall lead them. I'm Ari, and I just put narcissistic personality disorder on the table.
This is Righty Jim, and my on the table is trigger warnings. This week, 14 innocent people were murdered by Islamic terrorists in San Bernardino. We all have seen the press reports and the news. Could this attack have been avoided? A number of neighbors speaking up in the area in San Bernardino, where the terrorists were renting a house, mentioned that they saw a number of suspicious people, suspicious activity with packages, people working late into the night, but did not report it because they did not want to be labeled as racists. So that is where PC speech has gotten us. We've gotten us to the point where it has become a danger to America, where the left has gotten us so concerned about being correct and about not offending people that we are now letting terrorists operate freely in America under the prospect of being called racist or possibly profiling somebody that may not be a terrorist that just may be doing suspicious activities. To double down on that problem, this week, in the midst of these terror attacks, Loretta Lynch, Attorney General of the United States, appointed by Barack Obama, spoke out at a conference saying that she will prosecute anti-Muslim speech prosecute those who use anti-Muslim speech that edges towards violence. I've spoken to a constitutional law expert I know, asked him what that means, and he looked at me with a blank stare. He does not have any understanding of the legal meaning of what edging towards violence means. There is no legal definition of it, and it is not a term of art for the legal profession. So I find it interesting that the greatest threat our president thinks is climate change, and our attorney general thinks that we need to make sure that we stay away from speaking out about possible Muslim terrorists. Well, political correctness is killing us, and we need to bring it to an end before it actually does kill us. This is Righty Jim with my On the Table. All right, we're about out of time here, folks. By the way, tomorrow, Pearl Harbor Day, do not forget. It will be 74 years since the Japanese attacks on Pearl Harbor.
A day that shall live in infamy.
Yes, as unfortunately maybe Wednesday will too. All right, this is the Laguna Roundtable with your host, Righty Jim. Dr. Ari Grayson will be back next week. Here's a little Aerosmith, who was singing songs on the Pearl Harbor soundtrack, and will be next. I believe Full English Breakfast is up next with Jason Fetty. Have a good day, everybody.
Sleeping while you're far away dreaming. I could spend my life in this sweet surrender. I could stay lost in this moment forever. Every moment spent